All right, everybody, this is the Grey Goose, and you're listening to 91.5 WGLZ. We have our very special guest with us here on the line today. He is a 19-time Emmy Award winner, the former host of the longest-running game show in television history, and one of the biggest animal activists the world has ever seen. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Mr. Bob Barker with us today. Bob, how are you?
I am splendid, and I'm better after hearing that introduction.
I'm glad you liked that. I've been working on it.
Well, you did a fine job, and I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. So I guess we'll start at the beginning. Where are you originally from?
I beg your pardon?
Where are you originally from?
Where am I originally from?
Yes.
Well, it's I've lived in a lot of places. I hope we have a lot of time.
Oh, we got plenty of time.
Well, I was born in Darrington, Washington, a little town out in the timber. But I was born there because my father was an electrician on, and he worked on the big electrical lines. This was the early days of electricity. And so he went all over the country. And I was born out there in the timber in Washington. And then we went to Texas and we went various places. But I went through my grade school years. I was from the second grade till the eighth grade. I lived on the Rosebud Indian Reservation in South Dakota, and then I went to high school and college in Missouri, Springfield, Missouri.
Very nice. Growing up in South Dakota, was there a lot of animals?
Were there a lot of what?
Was there a lot of animals?
Enemies?
Animals.
No, there were no enemies at all. I am an eighth Sioux, and so I was an Indian, too. I was the palest Indian you've ever seen. And I had a great time up there. In fact, I think I would have, if I had a place to choose to be that age, that would be it. I really enjoyed it, every bit of it. We lived in a little town called Mission, only 200 people. And it was a big river down just below the town where we kids could go down there, we swim and have a great time. There was a dam where we ice skated, and we had athletic teams. They weren't organized like they are for kids now, but we were the Mission Midgets basketball team, and we played during the high school halftime of their games. And we had we didn't have uniforms, and we wore these white underwear shirts, you know, that have no sleeves, you know, just over your shoulder a strap looks like a basketball jersey. But we didn't, and the kids' mothers, they sewed numbers on their backs for, and my mother put a question mark on my back. And everybody'd say, "That's a foul on the question mark." It was quite an adventure.
It sounds like it. Now, when you went to college, where did you attend that?
I went to Drury University in Springfield, Missouri. It was just across the street from the high school that I went to there. And I played basketball in high school, and I got a scholarship over to cross the street and go to Drury and play basketball.
Wonderful. What position did you play?
I played forward. It was a different game in those days.
Oh, absolutely.
People say, "Well, could you dunk?" And not only could I not dunk, I never tried to dunk, and I never saw anybody dunk or try to dunk. And we all shot, if we were not right under the basket, we shot with two hands, and It was a different game and much slower. But fun.
Oh, absolutely. Basketball's a very fun sport.
Yeah.
Did you get involved with broadcasting while you were in college?
Oh, no, no. I was never in a school play. I was never in a school play. I was never a debater. I never appeared before an audience in my life until I got my first job in a radio station.
And how'd that come about?
Well, I owe it all to the United States Navy.
Mm.
When I went into the service, I didn't. Everybody was volunteering. It was all over the campus where people gathered together, guys talking about, I'm going to join the Marine Corps, or I'm going into the Army or whatever, Navy. And I didn't know, I wanted to go, but I didn't know what I wanted to join. And I was looking at a magazine, big full-page color ad there, a young ensign in the United States Navy. He was wearing his whites, which I thought was the best-looking uniform we had.
Mm-hmm.
All white, gold buttons, high collar. And he was a aviator, and he had his wings of gold on his mighty chest, and he was leaning on a trim fighter plane. And I looked at that picture, and I thought, if I'm going into the service, I want to look like that guy.
Absolutely.
And I went down to the post office and volunteered that day. I'd never seen the ocean. I'd never been up in an airplane,
mm-hmm.
but I became a naval aviator.
Wow.
And that's how I got my first job in radio.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder why. After the war, I got married when I got my wings. And after the war, I wanted to go back to college, and I wanted a part-time job. And I heard about the manager of a radio station
mm-hmm.
who was crazy about airplanes. And I thought, if he's crazy about airplanes, he might like to have a former fighter pilot work for him. So I got out my naval officer's uniform. I could still get it on then.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my wings of gold on my chest, and I went down and met G. Pearson Ward.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about airplanes for about 45 minutes, and I had my first job in radio.
There you go.
That's how I got started.
That is wonderful.
Oh, it was great. It was, it was my life. Developed my life. I have my first job was writing local news and sports and doing sportscasts and newscasts. Then I was a staff announcer, and we had an audience participation show on the air there, and it came on my shift, so I knew the show, but I certainly had never done anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one time, the host of the show didn't show up. I think that he had no trouble taking a drink, and that may have been his problem. But he didn't get there, and it was live, and everything was live. No taping at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the manager of the station, Mr. Ward, came and said, Bob, you've got to get in there and do that show. And I went charging in there. I didn't have time to get nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I grabbed the microphone, and I was on the air. And I started talking with the audience. I started talking with this lady, and she said something, I said something, and they laughed. And, I startled me. I thought it was just a great sound, and I'm going to try to make them do that some more, and I did. I got some laughs. And I went home, and fortunately my wife had heard that show.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Barker, that's what you should do. You did that better than you've ever done anything else. And we started out from that day to get me an audience participation show, and eventually we did.
And what show was that?
Well, my first national show was Truth or Consequences.
Mm.
Wasn't on radio, it was on television.
So what's that transition like between radio and television?
Well, we did, at that time, we did our own commercials.
Mm.
It was a national show, but we still would say, and I'll have another consequence, but first I want to tell you about, and then do a commercial. So it all happened, built, and went on, and I ended up doing what I finally did.
Wonderful. What was the format of the show, Truth or Consequences?
Well, I'd ask the contestant a question. And if they didn't tell the truth, they had to pay the consequence. And we had real crazy things for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they never told the truth, because if they had the if they did to ever answer the question, unfortunately, that was the first part of the question, and I'd ask another one. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'd have to ask three, but once they were up there, they paid the consequences.
What was the craziest consequence that ever happened on the show?
Oh, the craziest one. Who knows? let's see. I liked, we did things, hidden camera things.
Mm-hmm.
I'd get a guy out of the audience and I'd tell him, all right, you're going to have to pay the consequences, but we're going to have to get another contestant or two or something to be in the, with you. And in the meantime, you just go off here and they have a place for you to wait. And in this place we would have him to wait, we'd often do all sorts of things. One of my favorites was that they had a big fish bowl there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the fish, while he was sitting there, one of the fish started to talk with him. We had a hidden camera. I mean, a hidden camera and a hidden microphone. We had a guy who was great with voices. And he started trying to sound like a fish and talk to him. And would you believe it? This man started talking with the fish. And the audience loved it. And it was just a terrific consequence. The people all over the country were talking about it.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites.
How long were you involved with the show for?
Truth or Consequences?
Mm-hmm.
I did it about 20 years, I think it was.
Oh, wow. And then from there, we all know what your biggest show was after that. The Price is Right.
The Price is Right. I did them both for a while.
How did the Price is Right show come about?
Well, Mark Goodson, who was a developer and owner, saw me doing Truth or Consequences over a period of years, and the moment he got this new Price is Right, he said, could you do another show? And I said, I think so, because we were on Truth or Consequences. We were in syndication by that time.
Mm-hmm.
And this Price is Right was a national show, network show, so I could do it. And he described what he had done with the show. He changed it completely. And I started doing it and enjoyed that for years, too. Did it 35 years.
Absolutely. You had many memorable moments over the course of those 35 years.
You got that right. We never knew what was going to happen next.
I mean, it was one of the very first game shows to ultimately be aired in color in its entirety. Not many game shows had transitioned to that at that point, so that was a huge milestone right at the get-go.
I beg your pardon?
Right at the get-go, the show was airing in color. Not many game shows had aired in color by point.
No. Oh, we were one of the first.
Absolutely. Then you have the phase where you go from a half an hour show to an hour show.
Yep.
Who came up with that idea?
Mark, he came up with all the ideas of that type. He said he came to me one day in my dressing room. He said, what do you think? Think you could do this for an hour? And I said, absolutely, let's go. And we did.
Now with the games, there's so many different pricing games.
Yeah, it was a fast moving show, and we did it just as if it were live.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they taped, it was live, I guess, when we started. But we started taping it. But we did it just as if it were live, and it was an instant hit, and it was a hit all the years I did it, and still a hit.
Absolutely. How many pricing games did you come up with?
I didn't come up with a lot. I came up with four or five, maybe. But we had great ideas. They developed really fun things.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were on the air for 35 years with The Price is Right. Do you have any memorable contestants that come to mind over that span?
Oh, absolutely. I have the contestant. this was a lady in a low-cut dress who was in our audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still behind the the doors there. I had not been introduced as yet, and they were getting the first four contestants down. And when they called her name, she jumped to her feet and began jumping up and down, and both of them came right out of her dress and were there for the audience to see. And she didn't know it.
Oh, wow.
And she just kept running right on down to contestant show. And all the time she was running down there, the audience was screaming. And when I got out there, Johnny Olson was our announcer at that time. And I said, "Johnny, what has been going on out here?" He said, "Bob, this lady has been giving her all for you." And they went right on laughing some more. It was fun.
Oh, absolutely. That sounds like quite a memorable moment.
Oh, yes. They played it. You know, it's been seen on television for over the years.
Mm-hmm. Now, you hosted the show for 35 years. So when did you decide that it was the right time to retire?
Well, I became 83 years old, and I was doing the show as well as I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to quit while I was on top, and I was getting too tired. I'd go home at night, and I was really knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided this is the time, and I retired.
So what was that send-off like? What was the send-off like, your final show?
They had, leading up to it, we had different things, and had a big send-off with all the top brass of CBS came down, and all it was quite a thing. I'd done it successfully for years, and it went right on, and it's a very fond memory now.
Absolutely. Now, you are quite remembered for all of the game shows you have done, but you may be even more remembered for your work with pets.
Yes, I love it. I love I help them in every way I can, and fortunately, I've been helpful in some successes.
Absolutely. Where did your love of pets first come about?
The day I was born, I was one of millions of people
mm-hmm.
who are just born with a love of animals. And I don't remember not having animals, and I love them, and I love all of them, and I do what I can to help them and will till the day I die.
That's wonderful. We need more people like that in the world. Pets are very important. Animals play a huge role in our lives, and a lot of people tend to overlook that.
Well, I'll tell you, it's all developing. The animal rights movement is like a snowball,
mm-hmm.
and it's just rolling down a mountain, getting bigger and bigger and going faster and faster, and it's never going to stop now. We've made so many people aware, and young children are learning about it, and it's just happening, and I'm very, very proud to have been a part of it.
That is truly wonderful, and it kind of harkens back to a statement that you would say at the end of each episode of The Price is Right. Help control the pet population and have your pets spayed or neutered.
Right.
When did you decide to start saying that at the end of each episode?
Well, there are just too many cats and dogs being born in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
There are not homes in the country enough for them. There are people all over the country who work and work and work and try to keep the animals out of the shelters and try to keep them in homes, looking for possible owners, you know, and they're doomed to disappointment because they don't exist. There aren't enough, and the only answer is spay and neuter. Now, some people say that you can adopt your way out of this, but that's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly couldn't adopt your way out of the problem in Los Angeles or in New York or Chicago or any metropolitan area. Maybe some small town
mm-hmm.
could keep all of the animals out of the shelters, but not in the bigger towns. And the only answer is spay and neuter. And that's why I started it. And I'm proud to say I became known as the guru of spay and neuter.
That's a wonderful nickname.
That is.
Now, since you retired, how have you kept yourself busy?
Well, I do a lot of animal work.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to a lot of things. I go all over the country working on it, and I enjoy every moment of that. That's my principal occupation.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any advice for young people such as myself who want to go into the broadcasting industry?
Well, my only advice is that you have your first job wherever you may be, and if you're successful, just try to work your way up. I started in that little 250-watt station, and radio was before television.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to get jobs other places and so on. I finally did, and I worked my way up, and I decided to come to California. Now, I wouldn't advise you do that, because mm-hmm. I came to Hollywood. I didn't have a job. I didn't have an agent. I didn't have any so-called contacts of any kind. I was a ripe candidate to star.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a real break, and I thank God for it. I got a little radio show going, and then I got onto a bigger station. I got onto the CBS radio station in Hollywood, not on the network, but on the local station.
Mm-hmm.
And Ralph Edwards, bless him, he heard it, and he had Truth or Consequences going on the air, and he liked my work. He called me, and the rest, I just went right on from there. But without that break, thank God for that.
Absolutely. Where do you see the future of radio heading?
Well, I should think there'll always be radio. Yeah. Why not? It's very convenient. It's great in automobiles, and at night, if you want to listen to the radio to go to sleep, a lot of people go to sleep with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there'll probably always be a place for radio.
That's wonderful. I hope to hear that coming from a lot of other people here in the near future, because radio is my passion.
Well, it's a great way to make a living, I'll tell you that. I certainly enjoyed every minute I was on radio.
Wonderful. Now, we're getting ready to come to the end of this interview, but there's a few other things I'd like to mention. Growing up, I'm a huge game show fan. I've watched a lot of game shows over the years, and I was a big fan of The Price is Right growing up.
Right.
So this has been a huge honor for me to get to talk to you.
Well, it's a pleasure for me to speak with you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Now, the last thing I want to mention, I've been telling a lot of the students up here at our college that I was going to have you on. So they're making me ask you about this. They all love your appearance in Happy Gilmore.
Oh, yes. After that movie came out, I never taped a show.
Mm-hmm.
That the audience didn't want to ask me questions about Happy Gilmore. And young men particularly, they wanted to know, could you really whip Adam Sandler? Could you really whip him, do you think? I said, are you kidding? Adam Sandler couldn't whip Regis Philbin.
How did the idea for the fight scene come about?
Oh, I don't know. The movie people got the idea, and we did it, but they had no idea, I don't think, that it would be the success it was.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. Well, you're asking about it right now, and I do in most of my interviews, they want to talk about Happy Gilmore.
It's a wonderful moment, and it's always going to live on for years to come.
Well, I hope so.
Well, now, as we get ready to end this, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to hear?
Well, I have to say, help control the pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered. I couldn't leave the air without that.
That's wonderful. Bob, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, Walker, it was a pleasure, and I wish you very well in your career.
Thank you so much. That means a lot.
I mean it. You do a splendid interview, and I think that you're going to make it whatever you want to do.
Wonderful. Bob, thank you.
Thank you, Walker.
You have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. That was the Bob Barker, former host of The Price is Right and animal activist. We are now going to get back to the music. Here is Daniel by Elton John on 91.5 WGLZ, West Liberty, West Virginia.